On today's Bill of the Flitter Show, episode 118, Stockhausen, Strange Fruit, Lunch, and Vultures. All of this and more. The Flitter Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flitter Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome to the Flitter Show, kids. This is Kenty, your host. Jose is in the other room taking a nap. He is, he decided he's not, he said that he can take his nap, but he doesn't need to take his nap in the same room that I'm doing the show in. Can you believe that? He tells me something about precedence because I allowed him to take naps in the other room previously. So he's in the other room. He's sleeping on our new, that's actually not a new couch. It's the same couch with a new couch cover, which we bought today for $30 at Ocean Lots, called Ocean State Job Lots or something like that. Some get cheap stuff. We got these white plates, porcelain plates for $2.50 each. Like a dollar store, but like it's sort of like the Bloomingdale's of a dollar store. It's very good. It's really nice. But they're only in Massachusetts, so I guess you're fucked. You can't get here, right? So anyway, welcome to the Flitter Show. I've working on my show today. Today I really focused mostly on the ukulele songs because I found a collection of Sondheim songs, and there were some songs I wanted to do, and I did them, so you'll hear them. But they sort of fit with the show. Actually, only one Sondheim song today. That is not Creative Commons Zilla Fag, so, you know, don't get your panties up in a bunch. But my performance of it is, and of course, you know, I don't even know what the fucking Creative Commons license is. I mean, it's, you can use it, but, you know, give me credit for it, and don't use it for commercial efforts. You know, stuff like that. Don't be a bitch. Be nice about it, okay? I mean, you know, I want to spread my Flitter Show as far as it can get me more listeners and being paid for it. No, actually, I don't care about being paid for it because that would just give me a goddamn headache. But I do like more listeners because, you know, let's increase the conversation. Let's get more people. It's always good. Let's see here. I have a couple things here. Let me write down a note here. First in the news, Karl Heinz Stockhausen died December 5th of 07. I love Karl Heinz Stockhausen. He was a composer, German composer. Far out guy, believed in some strange things, but no stranger than, you know, a Scientologist or a Mormon, so... Or for that matter, Christians, you know, because, you know, Christians believe some far out things. When you consider the reality of science. And it's all on faith, right? But not all Christians believe this, that, you know, not all Christians have the same beliefs, as we found out, you know. So, but they're Christians still, so I don't know. You figure it out. But anyway, that's not really what this show's about. Karl Heinz Stockhausen is dead! And just wanted to mention that because I love Karl Heinz Stockhausen. So go listen to Karl Heinz Stockhausen. Go find some Stockhausen. Stockhausen. I will try to put... I'll have to put that in the show notes. I was listening to some other podcasts this week. The Saturn Cast and Cup of Tea with AJ. And they both mentioned the Omaha killer. What's his name? Robert Hawkins. Saturn Cast... said some nice things, said some good things. I mean, he's a verbal guy. He's a the guy, what's his name, Christian Huygens. However, he's on Saturn, so what he says really has nothing to do with the United States. You know, I don't know what kind of influence he wants to have on the United States. He's not even American. He's Dutch. But he wants to he thinks it's time that we outlaw guns of all kinds, and so because kids are getting their hands on them. And, you know, that really is not going to change anything. Even if it was outlawed, guns were outlawed, kids are still going to get their hands on them. And people who do want to have guns won't be able to have their hands on them. So he has this claim saying, well, you know, there's an argument saying that, well, if everybody's packing heat, you know, this kid wouldn't have gotten as far as he did. Which is probably true. And he thinks it's an urban myth that there is nobody has ever protected themselves from a mall shooter or whatever if they had guns. Now, he also says something about Columbine and the Virginia Tech. It is a law that you can't carry guns on a campus. So first of all, for those two instances, well, I mean, I don't think you should have guns in high school. I mean, kids shouldn't be carrying guns anyway, right? Under 18 shouldn't be carrying guns. So that's the high school, okay? As for the Virginia Tech, I mean, should people carry guns on campus, you know? If you're an adult and you want to carry a gun, you know, and the law says you can carry a gun, like a concealed weapon, I don't know. I think maybe. Probably that would have, you know, but are they going to carry a gun? You know, just because you can carry a gun doesn't mean you will carry a gun. And, you know, in circumstances like that, you know, a mall shooter, you just want to run and find a place to hide, you know. There's always going to be people like that. That's no reason to outlaw guns or, you know, I know people are upset, but I sound like this real pro-gun person, right? But I'm not. It's not that I'm anti-gun either. I just don't think, that's not going to solve anything. Like I said, I probably won't own a gun. I don't have a place for a gun. It would scare the hell out of me. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Only if I was in Wyoming or something like that, and I was surrounded by coyotes and bear and, you know, all these sort of wild animals, leopards and tigers, then I'd want to have a rifle of some sort. Now, Saturncast, the Christian Huygens mentions something about automatic weapons. Do they really need automatic weapons? Well, I say the same thing. I mean, should people be able to own these guns, which, like, you know, I saw this thing the other day. It's like this gun that you can pull the trigger and 5,000 bullets come out in a second. You know, it's like, that's a little overkill, you know? Whatever. But at the same time, you know, I said last week, we shouldn't be able to sell products which are detrimental to our society just because it's a free market, right? Some people could argue that guns are detriment to our society. Why do we allow them to be made? And that's a good question. So I don't know. I'm in a quandary here because I don't think insurance is all that good. And it's certainly not going to solve the healthcare problem. People getting the healthcare that they need without being, fucked over, losing everything. See, I was thinking about this, like without health, let's say without insurance, right? Let's say no insurance, okay? Like communities, what they would do is that the taxes they collect would put in place, like the Amish, you know, the Amish, they'll help each other build barns and houses. If there's a calamity, the community gets together and builds the house for the new family, okay? That's how I understand it. I mean, it could be far different. The reality could be far different, but I think that's probably how it works. That's how I understand it to work. So why couldn't it work in our communities today? Is that instead of paying insurance, we pay a little extra in taxes, right? So the town has enough money in its coffers to build 2%, like 2% of the house, like then let's say there are 100 houses, okay? And so 2% of that would be 2, right? Mr. Meckowitz is saying, Kenty, I told you about math. Look in your math book. Yeah, it's 2, right? So you have 2 houses. So it would be is this town of 100 houses, right, would have to have in its coffers, would have to have set aside enough money to replace 2 houses if there was a calamity, right? Which, you know, took the houses away, like a fire, or a plane falls down into the house, or the ground swallows it up, or a dragon comes by and stomps it to the ground. You know, something like that, is that the town would then have this money and build it, right? So, you know, people pay taxes, and that there's this kitty, there's this thing saving it for a rainy day, saving money for a rainy day. I'm going to get back to that because I have a phone call. So it would be a community-based thing, okay? And you're probably saying, Kenty, well, what about people who want a new house and they'll just burn it down themselves? Well, I mean, arsonists aren't going to be part of that. They would be tried, you know, for a crime because arson is wrong. But, I mean, there are natural calamities, right? So there would have to be enough money to, in any one year, well, I mean, except for the first year because you have to start collecting it, right, to rebuild the houses, you know, 2% of the houses in your area. Or let's say you live in an area like in California where there's these wildfires. Well, you know, that percentage might be a little higher, but that's the cost. I mean, if you have insurance, then that's going to be that problem anyway, right? And probably you're thinking to yourself, well, suppose more than, you know, 2% of the houses are destroyed, right? What's that? Well, I mean, you know, then the town gets together and starts building or doing whatever they can, you know. But, I mean, I think for the most part, things are pretty even, you know. Like I was talking last week, I mean, I went to the doctors 20 times since, you know, for the last 20 years. Once a year, maybe, at the most. And for the last, most of that time is the last year seeing my psychopharmacologist, which is like, you know, 6 times. And it's probably less than 20 times, really, okay. So that's what I'm thinking, you know, and, you know, car insurance, that's just bullshit anyway, you know, it's the same sort of thing. And healthcare insurance is, you know, just get rid of that and open it up to the free market without it being destroyed by the insurance companies. Okay, so anyway, I got an email. I just got the email. I'm getting this out late. Thank God I looked at my email, my Gmail, because I use Google Gmail. And this is from listener Kristen Oblivion. And she sent me an email. Healthcare insurance, yay or nay. So here's what she writes. Modern healthcare insurance doesn't work because the basic function of insurance is to spread risk. A problem arises when so many people claim benefits that there is no more risk to spread. As medical expenses are so high, and because probability dictates that people will file an expensive claim at some point in their lives, premiums for health insurance are seldom enough to cover all of the expenses owed to healthcare professionals and institutions with soaring costs of new technologies alongside an archaic medical doctrine that seems to hold that every death is a failure to satisfy humanity's quest for immortality. In this, insurance companies and for-profit medical institutions audaciously exploit our primal fear of death for maximized revenue. In contrast, medical phobic people, as you and I, generally pay for coverage more than applicable. Coverage more than applicable benefits. I might even suggest that if the status quo avoided medical care as much as you and I, insurance premiums would be much more affordable. But of course, that doesn't mean the world would be more healthy. And in a more probable circumstance, if medical insurance rates remained steady, insurance companies would simply profit from our hesitation to claim. So why do we keep paying? Because we too are concerned that we will need to make a large claim at some point when our proverbial number is finally drawn. Let me just say something here, Kristen, is that I've paid into a couple different insurance companies. The money I have put into the insurance companies is gone, is lost. That money doesn't help me. As soon as I am not covered, no one's going to cover me. It's not like I think that's a false assumption. It's not like a savings plan. I think without insurance, right, we would use that money that we are putting into insurance to create a medical, like a medical, there's actually a medical savings plan, is that each person would have a medical savings plan. Maybe it would be tax deductible and you'd be able to put in, like, you know, whatever number of dollars each year to save for your medical costs and then for the future that, you know, you have some problem that you have the money to pay for it. Now, the cost of healthcare is so, and this is not Kristen, this is still my comment. The cost of healthcare is outlandish, I think. I don't think that it is valued properly. I mean, first of all, you can't put a price on human life. Second of all, is it really cost $10,000 to set a broken arm or whatever, a broken leg? I don't think so. You know, that's where the problem is that the cost, the price, it's like government spending. Like a couple years ago, there was a big expose about what the government spends on things. They were paying like $500 for a hammer, and it was called something else, like this government, like this, you know, this like weird name, like a scientific name. It was just a fucking hammer, and we were paying $500. And I say we as taxpayers. The medical companies are just like that. So anyway, let me continue with Kristen's email. I just had to say that. And also about the immortality thing, I agree with you, Kristen, okay? A perplexity in the elimination of insurance and profit healthcare is that we would have a severe shortage of medical professionals. Fine with me. That's me saying fine with me. As aspiring candidates took to more lucrative fields within their intellectual grasp. Such a shortage would be further complicated by market forces if physicians were regularly and automatically held criminally liable through a new legal precedent. Court costs would pass to the ill-fated persons who are least able to make cut-and-dry decisions, and government and healthcare recipients would pay the lion's share of legislative costs via taxation and higher healthcare fees. Okay, I don't understand about court costs and stuff like that, but it seems like to me the judicial system should be open to everybody. There shouldn't be court costs. I mean, there should be lawyers, I guess. You know, they have to be paid. But these court costs, I don't understand that. You know, in an ideal world, people would choose careers solely on the basis of personal and humanitarian fulfillment. Well, that's what I'm trying to force on people. That's me again. But in this tangible, money-laden world that we now live, aspiring professionals, is that word again, usually choose a woven blend of personal fulfillment and monetary betterment through multifaceted motivations. There are many good doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals who are undoubtedly sandwiched between two seemingly opposing forces of newer technology and life-saving techniques versus the money to pay for those miracle devices in a money-strapped, credit-ridden society that simply wants to live well. P.S. In response to your comment last week, your show isn't crap. It's entertainment and discussion, and I love it. Kristen L. Richard, Flatus Show Enthusiast. Well, thank you, Kristen, so much. I don't really think my show is crap. I think I was being ironic. And I don't know. Whatever. But thank you. Thank you for your email. Always thoughtful. Always thoughtful. Kristen Oblivions is always thoughtful. And I also wanted to say something else about this. You said about being medical phobic. I'm not medical phobic because I'm not afraid of going to the doctors. But I just never – I mean, if I have a cold, I'm not going to go to the doctors, right? If I have a little tummy ache, I don't go to the doctors. I know how to take care of myself. And you have some really good points, but, you know – I guess I have a vision to, you know, change everything, turn over the soil. And, you know, if, you know, doctors want to leave the medical profession, go right ahead. Go right ahead and find whatever you're going to do, because you know what? You're not going to find anything. You're going to have too much education, so you won't be able to get a job at Starbucks. Okay, so I already talked to Omaha. Did I talk about Omaha? Oh, yeah. Okay. And then there's Cup of Tea with AJ. He mentioned Omaha, too. And how the guy, Robert Hawkins, said he was going to go out with style. And I'm thinking to myself, honey, that's not style. He needed the queer eye for the straight guy if he wanted to go out with style. killing people in a mall and then killing yourself is not going out with style. So now I have a phone call from Tim from For Whatever Reason.
Hello, Ken. This is Tim from For Whatever Reason. I can't believe you'd even question whether we were still listening. Of course we were, or are. I was just about to call you, actually, or send you an email or something of that sort to find out if you had gotten our package of preserves and jams and jellies and all that, and I'm happy to hear that you did get them. Never picked up on the fact that last show's artwork actually was a reference for us to pick up that you'd gotten it. Actually pretty amusing. But that's not why I called. I called about little Audrey. I'm very confused about something. This seems to be a very, very, very confusing theme song. Little Audrey says, save for a rainy day. But every time it rains, she spends what she put away. Okay, let's examine this, shall we? Little Audrey is saving for a rainy day. And when it rains, she spends what she saved. Isn't that the point? Am I missing something here? They're being critical of her in the theme song for spending what she saved. For the thing that she saved it for. I'm baffled. Perhaps you can expand upon this and explain to me, the apparently confused and naive listener. Thank you, Ken, and goodbye.
Okay, so Tim, what I think little Audrey, the reason why they're chastising little Audrey is that, yes, you save for a rainy day, and that she spends it every time it rains, meaning actually rains. See, little Audrey is literal. And so she sees it raining outside, and she says, oh, I've been saving this money for a rainy day, so I'm going to spend it now. She doesn't understand that rainy day means a day when you really need that money. For example, the day that, you know, your house is struck by a giant and is crashed, and so you need to have that money to rebuild. Or, you know, or the giant steps on you and you need to go and get some health care because you're flat as a pancake. That's the kind of rainy day. And little Audrey just, you know, is literal. That's the thing. She's literal. Literal. Okay? Thanks for the call, Tim. On with the show.
She knows her proverbs, A to Z, and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has to say.
The next day, little Audrey and her grandma were standing on their front porch watching the men pave their street. There was a cement mixer, a steamroller, and all kinds of things to watch. All of a sudden, Grandma saw a quarter out there right in the middle of the street. She dashed right out to get it, but just as she picked it up, along came the old steamroller and rolled her out flatter than a sheet of theme paper. Little Audrey just laughed and laughed, because she knew all the time it was only a dime. Are you tired of being alone? Not anymore. You can be Kenty's internet boyfriend. Just send Kenty an email or a voicemail declaring such and a picture, and Kenty will proudly display his bevy of boyfriends in a special photo album. Now you can tell people you have a boyfriend. An internet boyfriend. There is no obligation to have sex with Kenty, go on dates, remember birthdays or anniversaries. It's that easy. Be Kenty's internet boyfriend today. And now, girls can join as well. Void where prohibited by law. Only on The Flata Show.
Just what love will do. Love may live a day or a life.
Ooh,
to the lady to lunch. Everybody laugh, lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming they're fat and looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart, aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day, another $1,000. A matinee, a Pinter play, perhaps a piece of Mahler's. I'll drink to that. And one for Mahler. Here's to the girls who play wife, aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools, aren't they a gem? I'll drink to them. Let's all drink to them. And here's to the girls who just watch, aren't they the best? When they get depressed, it's a bottle of scotch plus a little jest. Another chance to disapprove, another brilliant zinger, another reason not to move, another vodka stinger. Oh, I'll drink to that. So here's to the girls on the go, everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch, the dinosaurs surviving the crunch. Let's hear it for the ladies who lunge. Everybody rise.
The other day, Ninja on Facebook. Hold on. Christ. The other day on Facebook. Fuck me. The other day on Facebook. Should I just keep all this stuff in? This is what I go through, kids, all the time. Okay, I'm going to leave it in. The other day on Facebook, Ninja asked a question about what was your earliest memory. And I actually have three early memories. One, I was in a playpen gnawing at the wood knobs, like the corner, there's a knob. I was teething on it. So I was 2, or I guess, I don't know how old I was. And I also remember being in the crib reading a book, and it was sepia toned, and there was an orange in it. And at the end, there was a boy in a crib, and he's looking there, and he had his you know, hands, and I was like looking at it, and I just felt, you know, weird looking at that boy, and it scared me. And then the third time I was in the crib, and I escaped the crib. Actually, I have another memory of the crib. What I did is I climbed out over the end of the crib instead of over the side of the crib. And then I remember being in the crib, and there was this, when the side of the crib went down, there was a spring, and I remember spinning the spring, and it would go up, and then would come down. You know, I'd spin it, it would go up, and then it would come down. So I remember that. But anyway, I was thinking about when I was a kid, older, like 4 or 5, sitting on the couch with my mother while she looked at Life magazine. And Life magazine did many spreads on, during that time, that was 1968, on the Vietnam War. And she used to read Life and cry. And, you know, we sat there together looking at Life magazine and looking at these war pictures. And she would cry. So that sort of gave me a, that's my, you know, how, what I felt thought of war as a child. Now, the Vietnam War didn't end until, what was it, 1974, I think, when they pulled them out. And as I grew older, I remember there was, you'd go to the mall, and there would be soldiers there, or people, I don't know what the organization was, but they were selling copper bracelets with the number, with a soldier's number on it. Their security number, I guess, their social security number, or whatever, their rank, and the rank, their serial number, I guess they call it, whatever that is. And these were soldiers still in Vietnam who were missing. I guess they were missing. I'm not really sure what it was. But I bought one. My mother, you know, shelled out whatever, $10 or whatever. I got one. My brother got one. And what happened is you had this bracelet and you wore it until the soldier came home. That was your soldier. And I remember my brother had written to, because you could write to the soldier, I think, or the soldier's family. And my brother had written and to him or his wife, and she responded saying, thank you. Or maybe she sent the thank you. You know, maybe somebody told him that this boy got, you know, got the soldier, and the wife got in touch with him. No one ever got in touch with me for my soldier. I had the copper bracelet and it turned my wrist green. But my cousins had one. Everybody had one of these copper bracelets with the soldier's number on it. And so they were bringing home the soldiers. And I remember the television. You'd watch the news and they would list all of the different soldiers that were returning. Like they would have a picture of the plane and then the people would be coming off. And there would be a list of, they would run the names or the serial numbers. I don't know how they did it. I guess the names. And I imagine in alphabetical order, right? And me and my brother would watch this, you know, in the evenings, waiting for our soldier to come home. Well, my brother's soldier did come home. We saw it on the news. You know, his name was there. And no sooner was his soldier home when he sent a letter to my brother with a picture of him and his family and saying, thank you for, you know, keeping us in mind. And this makes me think, why isn't there anything like that now for the soldiers in Vietnam? See? In Iraq, you know? I really think that would be a good idea to help link people to the soldiers who are fighting in this world, you know? I'm not against the military, and I am against, I was, you know, I think that our involvement in Iraq was wrong. I think it was, you know, it was misguided, I don't know, at best. However, there, you know, we have our guys and gals over there, and I think we have a disconnect in America with the service. So I think it would be a good idea to connect soldiers with people, civilians, to communicate with each other And so we are aware of just who is over in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever in the world and what they are doing, you know. So I want my Flight of Show listeners to get onto that and to organize that, okay? We will refrain from using copper because, first of all, it's very expensive and it turns your wrist green. But I would like to stay away from rubber because that's so Lance Armstrong, you know. So we have to find something else suitable. Perhaps, I don't know, something. But what do you think about that? I think that would be a good idea. What do you think? What do you think? So, anyway, I was raised by my, you know, my mother raised us. She was a stay-at-home mom. And she stayed. By the way, I think I mentioned last week that my mother was in the hospital. And that's a whole saga in itself, which I'll tell you what happened. She went, had a, it was Thanksgiving, she was having asthma problems. So she went to the doctors the following Tuesday, and he prescribed her prednisone or something, or steroid, some sort of steroid, and a strong antibiotic. So she was taking this stuff, and she got this really horrible stomach ache, like abdominal pains. So the doctor told her to go to the hospital. So my sister couldn't drive her, so they called an ambulance, and my mother went to the hospital. My sister came later after she could find a babysitter. So my sister shows up at the hospital, finds the room where my mother's at, and she's like, she goes to the room. She's like, this can't be the right room. There's all these doctors are sitting around the bed, right? So it is, and it's my mother, right? She sees my mother lying in bed. So she finds out that my mother, what happened is my mother was went to the emergency room. They gave her a very strong painkiller. And then they told her to get up and go give him a urine sample. The nurse just gave her the cup. Nurse was supposed to go with her, okay? So she went to the bathroom and proceeded to faint, whereupon falling on the toilet. Well, we think she fell on the toilet, hitting her abdomen, and then cracking her head open, requiring 10 staples. So she's in bed there with 10 staples in her head. Blood still in her hair, I found out. They didn't even clean the blood out. And so they give her a after they stapled her up, they gave her a CAT scan or something like that for the abdomen because she has had the pain in the abdomen, where they find this enormous mass in her abdomen. So no one knows what it is. Everybody's thinking cancer. What the hell's going on? They find out that her hemoglobin levels have gone down to 8. It was 15 when she started. And because of that, they realize that what's happening is that she's hemorrhaging. So they maintain an eye on her to see if her hemoglobin levels are. And then they have to go in and actually suture the artery that ruptured. It was a ruptured artery. It was blood. It was blood. All that mass was blood. So they go in and they fix her, and that was that. So she's fine now. And she still has to have the staples taken out of her head next week. And she's, you know, feeling a little sore. But she's okay. So thanks for everybody who emailed me and asked me how she was doing.
This is Tim.
And this is Nanette.
From For Whatever Reason, and you're listening to The Flatus Show with Kenty.
And Jose.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and a twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter crop.
Centralia, Washington. Recently, the most recent Two Guys, One Brain episode, which is like, I don't know, 262, 263, one of them, they're talking about how parts of the interstate have been washed out, and there's towns like Centralia, which are parts of, were underwater. That's what I imagined, they said, because I only listened to it once, and, you know, I just paid some attention to what was said, because I listened to him twice. But anyway, what I thought, they were talking about Centralia, how to get to Seattle, you know, you have to go through Centralia, and now because that road is underwater or damaged and needs to be fixed, they have to, the detour is like 70 miles. So Kenty thought, oh, I'll do a little research about Centralia, Washington. I looked it up, and indeed, it's a famous place. It's a traditional stop on the way to Seattle from Portland. And there was a massacre there in 1919 called the Centralia Massacre. Can you imagine? What a name. And basically, what happened, and this is from Wikipedia, wikipedia.org, for all of your information needs. The Centralia Massacre was a violent and bloody incident that occurred in the town of Centralia, Washington, on November 11th, 1919. During a parade celebrating the first anniversary of Armistice Day, this conflict between the American Legion and workers who were members of the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, also called the Wobblies Labor Union, resulted in 6 deaths, additional wounded, multiple prison terms, and an ongoing and especially bitter dispute over the motivations, timeline, and the events that precipitated the massacre. Let me read that again. And an ongoing and especially bitter dispute over the motivations, timeline, and the events of the precipitated massacre. The subsequent ramifications of this event included a trial that attracted national media attention, notoriety that contributed to the Red Scare of the late teens and the 20s, creation of a powerful martyr for the IWW, a monument to one side of the battle and a mural for the other, a formal tribute to the fallen legionnaires by President Warren G. Harding, and a deep-rooted enmity between the local American Legion and the Wobblies that persists to this day. Isn't that interesting? So, apparently, the Wobblies, right, this is what I find really interesting, have been attacked time and again since their creation. So the International Workers Union, or whatever it is, IWW, is headquartered in Cincinnati, Ohio. Its peak membership was 100,000 members in good standing, meaning they were paying their dues. That was in 1923, and they could marshal more than 300,000 workers. I'm not really sure how that works. After 1924, there was a downturn because of government repression. Today, there are 2,000 members worldwide, 900 in good standing,
which means that they have paid their dues in the past 2 months. It does not require that one work in a represented workplace. So it does, you know, you don't have like a plumber's union or whatever. You can do it. You can be anything and join the Wobblies. All workers united in a single union. That's what they want. All workers united in a single union, and that the wage system be abolished, and that they want to replace the business system, wage system, with workplace democracy. I'm not really sure how that works or what their idea is, but it seems like they want to reform these reform companies, reform the way business is done, so that you have this management that are getting these huge bonuses, and you know, basically lets the worker, you know, scratch their ass. The IWW was founded in Chicago in June 1905 at a convention of 200 socialists and anarchists and radical trade unionists from all over the United States, mainly the Western Federation of Miners, who were opposed to the policies of the American Federation of Labor. Let me describe some of the problems that they had. And I'll explain. This is what happened, right? There was, in Spokane, Washington had outlawed street meetings, meaning people couldn't meet on the street. And Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, a Wobbly organizer, was arrested for breaking this ordinance because she had people come and talk on the street. There was an idea of free speech, okay? The Spokane, Washington outlawed free speech. So they were arrested, and so 500 other Wobbly members came to Spokane, Washington to do this, and it became so too expensive for the police department to keep on arresting these people. And they were, you know, fighting for free speech, basically. I mean, yeah, they were the Wobblies, and, you know, they had this agenda or whatever, but who doesn't have an agenda? But let me just say something here about this really interesting. I'm sure if I'm fading away, it's because I'm, like, reading, too, at the same time. In Spokane, over 500 people went to jail, and 4 people died. Okay? That's actually what happened. 500 people went to jail, and then finally they had to stop it because it was just too expensive to keep on doing it. And it gets better than that, okay, what happens to some of these Wobblies. So let me pause. Okay, so let's get back to the 1919 massacre in Washington. Now, this is what really is disturbing. And it's disturbing for several reasons, which you'll find out. And I find very... you'll hear. Listen to it. Just listen to it. I'm going to bring this over here, okay, so I can read it and talk at the same time. I hope that didn't make too much noise. The murder of Wesley Everest. The story of the lynching of the American Revolutionary Unionist and former soldier Wesley Everest by patriots. Death of a Wobbly. This is from libcom.org. Following the Seattle General Strike of 1919, in which the revolutionary rank-and-file union, the industrial workers of the world, was a key player, bosses and the U.S. government stepped up the repression of the IWW. In Centralia, Washington, where the IWW had been organizing lumber workers, the lumber interest made plans to get rid of the IWW. On November 11th of 1919, Armistice Day, the Legion, a patriotic group, and I put that in quotes, paraded through town with rubber hoses and gas pipes, and the IWW prepared for an attack. When the Legion passed the IWW hall, shots were fired. It is unclear who fired first. They stormed the hall. There was more firing, and 3 Legion men were killed. It just makes me disgusted to think that this is our history, you know. It's a cunts. Sorry about that. But we already talked about that word, okay? I could say pricks, too.
genitalia in Centralia. Anyway, inside the headquarters was an IWW member, a lumberjack named Wesley Everest, who had been in France as a soldier while the IWW national leaders were on trial for obstructing the war effort. Everest was in an army uniform and carrying a rifle. He emptied it into the crowd, dropped it, and ran for the woods, followed by a mob. He started to wade across the river, found the current too strong, turned, shot the leading man dead, threw his gun into the river, and fought the mob with his fists. They dragged him back to town behind an automobile, suspended him from a telegraph pole, took him down, locked him in jail. That night, his jailhouse door was broken down. He was dragged out, put on the floor of a car. His genitals were cut off. Then he was taken to a bridge, hanged, and his body riddled with bullets. No one was ever arrested for Everest's murder, but 11 Wobblies, IWW members, were put on trial for killing an American Legion leader during the parade, and 6 of them spent 15 years in prison. It just makes me angry, because that is the history of the United States, and that makes me think that the whole idea of lynching and having these mob mentality. I mean, look, it says the U.S. government stepped up repression of the IWW, right? And it was the lumber company who backed the patriotic group, the Legionnaires or whatever. And then they came in with their rubber hoses and the gas pipes to break down the IWW because, you know, they had to get rid of it, right? You have to fight force with force. That's the same kind of mentality as these white crackers out there, these racist people. I mean, the fact that they were lynching, you know, people, I mean, that's just like, that is like this racist thing. But it's what I mean by racist thing is this mentality in America, you know, resistant to, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I've already talked about what I think about unions. And I think, to a large extent, unions are a terrible thing. But this makes me so angry that I'm almost pro-union. You know? Because I would rather be on the... I think the union side here has the higher moral ground than the other side. I mean, that is insane. It is terrible. My heart cries, you know, that the ghost of Wesley Everest is crying out to be that for his story to be told, you know, lost to history. I mean, I didn't know about it until I read this, and I have to actually go back. I have to do a better job at giving you more information about the IWW and also about, you know, Wesley Everest. But it's a sad stain in our history of these mobs doing their lynchings and stuff, okay? It is very sad, and it's wrong, these vigilante groups. Now, I'll tell you a story, which you might find hard to believe. I lived in a town in Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia, and it was a township, part of a township, and it was like the township was divided up into little areas, okay? So my area, Ardsley, was 1 square mile by 1 square mile. It had a cemetery. It was like our town, right? It even had its own elementary school. You know, I went to the elementary school. Only white people lived in Ardsley, okay? I mean, there was just no black families, no Hispanic families, no Chinese families. It was white. Catholic, there was a large Catholic population and a large Protestant. It was like half Catholic, half Protestant, okay? Because there's a big Catholic church on the one end and little evangelical churches and Presbyterian church. So anyway, I lived on Tennis Avenue. And up the street from me, on the opposite side of the street from where I live, but up near Jengatown Road, there was these little houses. And there were 3 of them in a row. Tiny little houses. I mean, maybe 2 bedrooms, right? It was like, they were like little bungalows. I don't know how to describe them. Anyway, this was in 1977, 78, okay? A black woman and 2 black women moved in to the house. It was the mother and her daughter.
And they bought the house, right? They bought a house and, you know, they moved up there. No sooner did they move into the house when a group of men burned a cross on their lawn. Now, this is Pennsylvania in 1977. And, you know, right outside of Philadelphia. We're not talking like the crackers near Gettysburg. You know, we're talking about, you know, fairly, you know, liberal. But as I have found out, there is a growing number of white supremacists in Pennsylvania, which saddens Kenty, because I love Pennsylvania. And these people should all die. I wish, you know, that there could be a virus created to kill these people. I'm serious. I mean, just wipe them out. You know, they're not white crackers, but these, not white people, because I'm white, I don't want to die. Just these crazy ass people, you know? It's like, I don't understand. You know, that sounds terrible, because I really shouldn't do that. But I wish to God that they would, like, find out that the wrong that they're doing, you know, and stop it. But, you know, I don't know, you know. It just makes me feel, oh, I don't know, I feel terrible. I feel terrible. I feel this. Anyway, back at the burning cross, I was appalled. The whole neighborhood was appalled, and no one was arrested, but there was evidence of some people. There was talk about who it was who did it, and I never really got involved because I was only 13 or whatever, right? However, after that happened, I baked a cake and I took it up to the ladies, and I knocked on the door, and they were polite. They said, "We don't want your cake." And they were, you know, like, I guess they were afraid, you know. I was trying to, you know, hand out. I was trying to say, I don't hate you. Welcome to the neighborhood. And, but, you know, I guess they wanted to just keep to themselves, which they did. So I felt bad. I still feel bad. I mean, I don't know. I feel bad for the world that this happens. And I mean, that's what happens in America. And then just other crap happens all over the world. So anyway, I have to do some more work on this.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking. Bible reading to confuse the Orthodox believer.
Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to uproot. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to tear down, and a time to build. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones, and a time to gather them. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain. A time to search, and a time to give up. A time to keep, and a time to throw away. A time to tear, and a time to mend. A time to be silent, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. And a time for war, and a time for peace. What does the worker gain from his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. Yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live. That everyone must eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. I also thought, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward, and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Okay. This is one of my favorite chapters, in the book of Ecclesiastes. It puts to rest the idea that there's a heaven. It says here, everything is meaningless, and all go to the same place, all come from dust, and to dust they return. I also think that this sort of indicates that, you know, we're no better than the animals, which could mean that we evolved from animals. You know, a passage which sort of indicates the idea that evolution is a fact, or real, you know. What else does it say? It also says, I just read it too. Yeah, I just read it. You know, this is a bad sermon here. Sorry. You just listen to it and make up your own mind what you think it means. That's what you have to do anyway. I'm just giving you that. I'm just letting you know. It's out there. Anyway, this is from the New International Version, from the Bible in 90 Days. Okay. I like the idea about this, the worker, you know. You have to enjoy your work and enjoy. You have to eat. You have to drink. Find satisfaction in your toil. That's why, you know, I talk about things like affordable housing. You know, people have to enjoy their work and their life. You know, they have to have housing. They have to enjoy life, you know. It's just too short. There's a time for everything, you know. And, well, it also says here everything is meaningless, and that everything that has happened has already happened before, and that God will call the past to account. So I guess that means if you're... And it also says God will bring judgment both to the righteous and the wicked. Oh, he also said, I saw in the place of judgment wickedness was there, and in the place of justice wickedness was there. So I don't know what that means, but that's what he saw. Ecclesiastes, but you know, but that's what we see. That's, I guess, what I bitch all the time, because I see, you know, there is no justice, you know, there's no, you know, there's just these horrible people running the world. But the joke's on them, right? So anyway, so that's my little passage for the Bible today. So hope you enjoyed it. Bye.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Sometimes, Jed, I wish I'd never taken this job as sheriff.
I know what you mean.
Take today, Memorial Day. Everybody else is sitting around their house taking things easy like.
Or else out boating or having a picnic.
That's right, enjoying themselves. But us, we're sitting around a stuffy old office.
Yep, waiting for something to happen. Like vultures. I could think of a lot pleasanter things I'd rather be...
I'll get it. Probably my wife. Green County Sheriff's Office. Who? Tom Edson's farm. Shot? Tom Edson shot by your wife? We'll be right out.
Hey,
As you can see, Sheriff, my wife Edith is hysterical. She's in no condition to answer questions.
I didn't kill Dad. I didn't. You know I didn't, Ronald.
Jed.
Yep, Sheriff.
As soon as you finish that sketch and notes on the position of the body, you'd better call Doc Ferris.
That's a good idea. Edith should be placed under a doctor's care immediately. She's been building up to this collapse for some time.
You must believe me. I didn't kill Dad. I wasn't even in the house.
You weren't in the house?
No. I was in the stables talking to the horses when I heard the shots and ran back to the house.
Edith, darling, you know you were in the room kneeling by your father when I came into the house, weren't you?
Oh, yes, Ronald.
And you had the gun in your hand, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, Ronald, but I didn't kill Dad.
You see, Sheriff?
Looks bad.
Tom Edson never approved of Edith's marriage to me, Sheriff, and because of that, Edith and I had never been in here during the 10 years we've been married. This is our first visit.
I've called the doc, Sheriff. He'll be right out.
Good.
Oh, another thing, Sheriff. I noticed the automatic, the murder weapon, had a peculiar odor about it.
Did?
Yep. Smells something like powder or perfume.
Mm. It's Edith's gun. She carried it in her purse. You know how things in a woman's purse always smells like their face powder?
Yeah.
Edith and her father had been arguing all morning. Then when I heard the postman blow his whistle, you know how he blows a little whistle on these country routes when he leaves mail? Well, it was a relief to get out of the house. After I walked all the way out that long lane to the mailbox, there wasn't anything there but a couple of bills. While I was walking back, I heard shots and...
Ronald, how can you stand there and so calmly convict your own wife? Sheriff, I didn't kill my father.
I know you didn't, Edith. Now I know that Ronald is the murderer.
On what clues does the sheriff place his accusation that Ronald is the murderer? Do you know? We'll be back in 1 minute with the solution. In the meantime... Back to our mystery.
Ronald, maybe mail doesn't mean much to you big city folks. You maybe don't pay much attention to its delivery. But we farmers appreciate our mail and know all about deliveries. You couldn't have heard the mailman's whistle and gone out for the mail, Ronald, because today is Memorial Day, a national holiday, and mail isn't delivered on national holidays. However, holiday or not, I'm going to deliver you to the county jail immediately.
Reluctance by Robert Frost from his collection of poems, A Boy's Will. Out through the fields and the woods and over the walls I have wended. I have climbed the hills of view and looked at the world and descended. I have come by the highway home and lo, it is ended. The leaves are all dead on the ground, save those that the oak is keeping, to ravel them one by one and let them go scraping and creeping out over the crusted snow when others are sleeping. And the dead leaves lie huddled and still, no longer blown hither and thither. The last lone aster is gone, the flowers of the witch hazel wither. The heart is still aching to seek, but the feet question whither. Ah, when to the heart of man was it ever less than a treason to go with the drift of things, to yield with a grace to reason, and bow and accept the end of a love or a season?
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Sometimes, Jed, I wish I'd never taken this job as sheriff.
I know what you mean.
Take today, Memorial Day. Everybody else is sitting around their house, taking things easy-like.
Or else out boating or having a picnic.
That's right, enjoying themselves. But us, we're sitting around a stuffy old office.
Yep, waiting for something to happen, like vultures.